You hear me all right?
Ladies and gentlemen, front, left, right, back again. Who is it?
That's crazy, dude. That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot. And if my computer just starts smoking, I'm not going to be surprised. All right, folks, this is the Subway Domer podcast. I am, I don't even know if I'm going to say a host, but I'm at least a participant producing. I am Irish Titanist. You can find me on TNNDN.
You're the guiding hand.
The guiding hand here, if nothing else. Obviously, we got Subway Domer. Josh, I'm going back and looking through the Subway Domer Podomatic site here. And the last time that you and I spoke, Florida State preview and midseason update.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I can only assume that
things might have changed a little bit since then.
We were undefeated at the time. Since then, so
I'm feeling pretty good about ourselves, weren't we?
I think so. I mean, I haven't gone back and listened to it. I don't know how much
I was tortured.
Unicorns and ponies and rainbows. I think everybody was a little surprised at the way that the defense was playing at the time because it was a big unknown. And Brian Kelly basically said, hey, we're gonna have to outscore teams this year. Since then, Notre Dame's gone 1-5. And the defense maybe reverted back to what everybody kind of expected at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and obviously I think in hindsight that just goes to what their competition level was. So it should be no real big surprise if you would have told us this in August. But after what they were doing, you know, I mean it became a shock because you thought things were coming together a little bit, but you start throwing in injuries and playing freshman and all that. It shouldn't be too much of a shock, but I mean, obviously it was, but I think this is a lot. The defense ended up being a lot more like we thought it would be, but worse.
Well, and not only that, I mean, my feeling is, I mean, you can have problems on one side of the ball, right? You can have a young or an inexperienced defense or a new scheme. And as long as you're scoring a ton of points, you can expect to win that game. Or you can have a really good defense and be offensively inept, and you can still win some games. When those problems pop up on both sides of the ball, that's when you come into really a perfect storm of bad juju. Is that not what happened to Notre Dame? And when I say offense, I mean they did score points. I'm talking specifically about the turnovers.
Yeah, and I was going to point that out right away, but you're absolutely correct. I mean, it's not like the offense lacked the ability to score points. It just they lacked the ability to maintain. And turning the ball over, in 2012, I can remember quite a few times on a turnover, and even last year, where it didn't really matter. I mean, Kyle made turnover, throws a pick, defense goes out there and does their job. I mean, they did it pretty well. I can't remember what game it was leading up to. It might have been after the Arizona State game. But there was a stat that Tim Priester and Pete Sampson had on one of their podcasts was the quick turnaround touchdowns, which were after points after turnover.
Yeah, yeah.
The opposing team was averaging two plays to get in the end zone.
Yeah, there were seven. I think it was seven turnovers in their own 20. And all of them had turned into touchdowns and it took 14 plays.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's a hell of, I mean, that is a telltale of exactly how turnovers blow up in your face. And I had looked at some, just some of the stats the other day. I'm trying to come up with just a few December stories, to run with and kind of gouge it over the stats a little bit. And just the points off turnovers alone, I can't remember the exact number, but it's almost like the opposing team was averaging, I want to say, 18.5 or 19 points points per game against Notre Dame off turnovers.
That's unreal.
Which is just, that's insane. Yeah. I mean, that's a touch. That's two touchdowns and a field goal.
Right.
I mean, that's just a huge amount. I mean, then look at, you know, that's a huge amount of points.
Well, and we've gone from, I think last year Notre Dame was averaging, what, like 27 points a game, and they bumped that up to maybe 36. Now, I'm sure that number fell.
I think it was 32, 33 points.
Okay, I was going to say after USC, I haven't looked at it.
It was like the 60th ranked scoring offense in the country. But obviously, you know, a point is a difference between, you know, place 60 and place 19.
But, you know, as you look at turnovers, you know, 35 points, it's not Baylor. It's not, you know, hanging 50 on everyone, but that should be enough to win a lot of games. You shouldn't get into that 43-40 scenario with a team like Northwestern. And when you're spotting them, two touchdowns and a field goal per game on average off of turnovers, that makes a big difference, especially when the defense has the injuries starting to pile up.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, just go ahead and cut it in half. You know, just say it's 17 points. You know, that's halfway to 34.
Right.
You know, so if you're averaging, let's just say, 32 points a game, all they have to score offensively is 17 points, which I would take a scoring defense that only allowed 17 points. I mean, I know that's still kind of high. It's higher than, like, an elite defense of, it would be around, you know, 10, 11 points. But I would still take 17 points every time, especially with an offense like ours. So when they're, you know, exactly what you said, when they're confident, when they're just go ahead and spotting them 17 points, that makes it very difficult for your team to win in football games. And it makes it difficult for your offense, I mean, to do, you know, a whole lot of anything. I know everyone's always so up in arms over run versus pass and this and that. But, you know, shit, once you get down big, and especially a guy like Kelly, I don't even know anyone would think you would run the ball. You're going to chuck it until you, I mean, it's just play a video game in your life, people. I
mean, right. No, you do. You do.
You know, once you go down, it's all out the window. You know, you're chucking to get back in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I wonder, as the defense got less and less healthy, you know, my thought of, hey, we need to possess the ball, started to increase more and more, and you kind of need to run the ball to do that. You know, Louisville, I thought Notre Dame called a pretty good game against Louisville. I thought Brian Kelly had a pretty good game, you know, game plan. But Louisville had the ball 10 more minutes than Notre Dame did in that game. And I just, pardon me.
We rushed for like 200.
We did, yeah.
They rushed for
they had 211.
Something like that.
Yep.
And they were rushing yards that were meaningful, meaning that they came on first down. They came in huge chunks on first down. They got chunks on third down. I mean, they moved the ball. They were pounding yards, and you know that. I mean, that's the secret to winning anywhere. And I'm not I don't give a, you know, who, what you do.
Hey,
well,
this is your show. You can cuss if you want to.
I'll say who. Sometimes that's more. That tells you a little bit more. But, you know, I don't care what you do. Just do it well. I mean, I'm just not gonna stick to a dogma of, you know, run the triple option.
Well, no,
or run,
listen.
What Louisville did is what they took the control of the game completely out of Notre Dame's hands by running the football. Now, if they were shooting 11, 15-yard darts every play, it's the same thing. But what they did was they controlled it one way or another. So, and they did it by running the ball. To me, it doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you control it.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame couldn't do that at all this year, running the ball or throwing the ball. Now, they did great, you know, passing the football. I mean, Golson had a ton of yards. Will Fuller had a ton of receiving touchdowns. But there was key moments when they just couldn't do it. And so much focus goes, you know, on Kelly's play calling, goes on Golson, and lately, last few weeks, has been on the receivers. But I'm telling you what, this offensive line, and I think I had said it prior to the Florida State game, and you said, is piss poor a grade for this line? I said, yeah, absolutely piss poor season long was the grade for the offensive line. They were just absolutely awful. Just watch that first half against Southern Cal. And I don't care. You know, I know guys are screaming, well, how did Golson not see Will Fuller jumping, doing jumping jacks? Dude, because he's running for his life.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but sometimes those things, when things are moving that fast and you got guys wanting to prison rape you on that field, you're not going to see some things. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the line is a thing. Again, you know, USC, same thing. They outpossessed the ball by 15 minutes against Notre Dame. You know, I do agree with you in large part on the line. It was nice to see McGlinchey, I guess, finally get some reps.
That's the thing that was killing me. I'm like, why even put him in?
But at the same,
that's a disgrace. They should have put him in six weeks ago.
All right, so what you just said about McGlinchey is what a lot of people say about Zaire. How do you feel on that topic?
Well, I differ from almost everybody on that subject matter. Something I'll be writing hopefully here this week is going to be about the quarterback position and about Everett Golson in particular. So I won't get too in-depth and spoil the story, even though I guess I really don't care. But the thing is, this is still Everett Golson's just his second year as a starter. And if you want to start getting tic-tacky about it, during his first year, he had an absolute escape, you know, mechanism with Tommy Rees coming in to help him out when things got tough. So this is the first year he's had to deal with a whole, you know, game of, you know, if something screws up, you know, this is how you deal with it. Before, it was the hook and sit. So, I mean, this is still a learning process. Nobody wants to hear that. I understand that. You know, it shouldn't be like that, I guess, in some people's minds. But it just is. So, I mean, go back and look at Brady Quinn's sophomore year. Go back and look at Jimmy Clausen's sophomore year. And then go ahead and look at their junior years and see what they did. And I realize Everett would be a fifth-year senior next year, but both Quinn and Clausen started as true freshmen. So in their third year of starting, look at the difference. Look at the difference of play. And it's amazing. And, you know, I have a strong feeling if Kelly can adjust that head of Golson's just a wee bit, I think you would have a season like that. Because, I mean, in all actuality, look at Golson's stats. They're not bad. They're good. You know, there's, you know, some interceptions there.
Some?
And he's going to have the fumbles.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I mean.
Do you
think? You know, you take, let's just say you cut that in half, and he's going to New York. You know, I mean, those are good enough numbers to get back.
Do you think that they need to?
You know, it's not Mariota. Say what?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it seems like the zone read has been completely removed from the game plan when Golson's in there. Obviously, they've shown a little bit more tendency to run it with Zaire.
Because, I mean, look, and that was a thing. I mean, Zaire can run the zone read, and I can appreciate everyone, especially run nuts, dying to see it. Because not only does it run the damn football, it's, hey, here's a way you can get both Bryant and Folsett on the field at the same time. And I can appreciate that 100%. But, yeah, I mean, you have to dial in. You have to be balanced across the board, whether it be Golson at quarterback or Zaire at quarterback. One way or another, the offense has to find a little more balance. And, you know, I'm not talking 50-50 here.
No,
talking about production-wise being able to produce.
Well, but
so one needs the other, and I just don't know with Zaire at quarterback, if he is going to be ready to throw the football in a manner that would reflect that.
I'm with you there. I think Malik at this point looks like the one end of the spectrum, which is very run heavy. Golson, obviously, from what we've seen so far this year, is kind of the other end of the spectrum, very pass heavy. I am a kind of a run the ball guy, but I would go so far as to say it's not necessarily just to see equal stats at the end of the game, like, hey, we had 40 pass and 40 run attempts, you know, by the end of the game. Because I think when it happens in the game is so much more critical than just backloading running yards or passing or whatever it is. And
right.
I look at USC. I mean,
what I mean when I'm talking about.
No, I'm with
right?
you. But I mean,
I'm talking about throughout the course, the ebb and flow of the game.
I agree. Well,
like, being able to mix up your play calling.
No, I do. But
that's balance.
But that's what it is. And when I say run the ball, I don't say run the ball because I think we need to run 60 times. words. I say it because I think that we are, and I don't even have a problem being pass first. It's when this team becomes pass only, especially when
they become pass dependent.
Especially when Golson's struggling, it just is inexplicable to me. And I just want to ask your opinion on this before we move on. In the first four series against USC, we punted. We had two runs. One, I believe, was a one-yard run to Folsom. One was a four-yard sweep to Procise. Other than that, those two runs, we had four complete passes, eight incompletions, and a sack. So it was out of 15 plays, I think it was, 15 were passes and two were runs. That doesn't scream balance to me.
No, absolutely not. And I think in a lot of ways, I mean, in every way, you know, that's on Brian Kelly, the play caller. And what that is, and that's an easy, I think it's an easy thing to diagnose, is the game was just getting away from him. And it happens to play callers sometimes. You know, I always like to bring up, you know, the video game mentality, because everyone wants to be that armchair quarterback or armchair head coach and second guess everything. Well, all I'm thinking is, and I thought about this during the game, is, you know, what are you going to do when you're playing your buddy next to you? And, you know, you get in these grooves of calling plays, and play callers will do this, and they just think that's going to work. They knew damn well that was going to work. And it didn't, because for some reason or another, something happened on the field where it didn't. And you just kind of test it again, and you test it again. And before you know it, you're totally out of sync. And the whole, you know, your whole system of calling plays just flew away from you. And I think that's what happened to Kelly. It happens to good and great public callers from time to time. It just, USC was just such a cluster bomb. A clusterfuck of what the hell, all in one spot, that everything got magnified. And
the defense
exposed a lot of truths to the team. I mean, I'm not saying that, but I'm not making an excuse for them. I'm saying, they fucked up pretty hard, and it's a telltale sign of what has happened throughout the season at times. Can the team and can Kelly learn from that? Absolutely. I mean, I don't think anything that we saw isn't something that's fixable, especially with, you know, healing time for players that are injured.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean,
the defense didn't do him any favors against
USC. Kelly just kind of let that get away from him early in the game. I mean, and we've seen that before from him. So, you know, it wasn't too shocking.
Yeah. All right. So I got a couple of questions. This team, both sides of the ball, appeared on the field from a player standpoint a little devoid of leadership. I don't know if that's because of who was selected as captains, if it's just because of the youth or what it is. So my question for you is, we're talking about play calling here. Is Kelly too wrapped up in calling plays to be a leader to the whole team? In other words, is he so engrossed in calling plays, and then when offense comes off, like he's over sitting in the corner with Golson and they're you know, texting each other or whatever they do? Is he so much wrapped up in that he's failing the rest of the team from a leadership standpoint? And then to tie into that, what would it make sense for a guy like Jeff Quinn, who is Brian Kelly's offensive coordinator, his entire career from Grand Valley State to Cincinnati, his OC was Jeff Quinn. The only time Brian Kelly has not had him as an offensive coordinator is at his time at Notre Dame. And I don't think it's a coincidence when people are like, well, we really haven't seen Brian Kelly's offense at Notre Dame. Well, he hasn't had Jeff Quinn, I think. I don't know. Do you see that? And then secondly, if Quinn was there to call plays or take some of that off of Kelly's shoulders, will that free up Kelly to be more of a head coach instead of the offensive play caller?
Yeah, I can answer all that in earnest. First of all, I really don't see too much of a problem with it. It's not as much of a problem as it was with Charlie Weiss and the way Weiss was with the offense. And it's definitely, you know, look at the spectrum of like Willingham, who focused on nothing except for, I don't know what the hell you're thinking about during the game, but I can see the point being made about that with Kelly, but I think he's too good of a coach to have that derail him throughout the game. Could the team use more of him? Yes. You know, I mean, was he worn thin a little bit? Yes, absolutely. Which leads to your next question about Quinn. And I said from the jump, as soon as Jeff Quinn was let go at Buffalo, I wrote a story and I told you right away, I'm like, this guy is going to be on the staff next year. I don't care who was getting moved. I'm like, he's going to be on the staff next year. And there's reasons why. I mean, this is the go-to guy for Kelly, has been for a long time. Kelly relies, and when he needs something, he looks inward. You know, he looks at his coaching past, people that he knows, people that he trusts to get his message across and to do the things that he wants done his way. And Jeff Quinn is the number one candidate. I mean, people thought Chuck Martin was like that when Kelly first brought him over there. That's nothing in comparison to what Jeff Quinn means to Brian Kelly. Now, think about that for a minute.
No, Chuck Martin's history with him really wasn't that deep because he took over.
It wasn't that deep.
He took over when Kelly left.
With him taking the head coaching job at Miami, which Kelly had always said would be a lateral move, that kind of job from, you know, an assistant job at ND. You know, and he was like, you know, we're just pushing him out the door, basically. You know, obviously there was, and we've talked about that before, there was lots of problems in-house. Jeff Quinn.
Well, and not only that.
But I don't even know what position, you know, where does he go? I mean, there's going to be some staff shakeups.
All right,
I have no doubt about that.
What's your feeling on Harry Hiestand after this year?
Fire him.
Okay.
I mean, I know people.
I like him. He recruits well. I feel like Notre Dame had a good. I thought the line would be the strength going in this year. It's so confusing to me that they're not. I look at Ohio State's line and I'm like, Warner.
The reason
we were
firing an assistant coach being recruiting is the worst reason to not fire an assistant coach. There are people that will recruit. They will. They will go after and get it. I mean, these guys are not irreplaceable. I mean, it's not like Harry Hiestand did a bang-up, not awesome job at Tennessee. And I think that we were seeing a little bit of results, but nothing has really gotten better, you know, in the last 2 years. They look soft as fuck.
Yeah.
They don't play hard. They absolutely get blown off the fucking ball. And, yeah, they've recruited better than anyone on the across the offensive line over the last 2-3 years. Let that sink in for a minute. They recruited better than almost everyone at offensive line in the last 2-3 years, and then look at the offensive line play. So, yeah, you can recruit these guys, but you sure as hell can't coach them. And we've already had a head coach, Charlie Weiss, who has shown us that that is definitely not the way you want to run a college football team.
Yeah.
So if he's the guy that has to go, he's got to go.
Well,
I just wonder if
that's how Jeff Quinn fits in the equation, because not only was he the offensive coordinator, he was also the offensive line.
Right.
He was
right.
The offensive line coach for Kelly for about 18 years up until 2009.
Obviously, I mean, there's a difference in style between Hiestand and Kelly. I think, you know, just the offense that Brian Kelly runs or wants to run is, I think, different than the style of offensive line play that Harry Hiestand is able to coach well. Not saying that he's not coaching it, but to coach really well. Where Jeff Quinn, on the flip side of that, that's exactly what he does well.
Reese had, I want to say, the fewest, or was tied for the fewest sacks in the nation last year. Who gets the credit for that? Reese by changing protection? Zach Martin for being in there? Is it Hiestand? I mean, who do you attribute that to last year?
Well, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, yeah, obviously Zach Martin, who was an absolute. I mean, Zach Martin and Chris Watt, you know, on his blind side, helped out probably quite a bit. You know, Tommy Reese, who's a smart football player. I mean, obviously, you know, he's sitting there, you know, checking things out. He's reading defenses. I mean, there's a lot of small things that attributed to that, and that's great. That's a great stat to have. I wish we had better pass protection for Everett Golson. But think about when we went to go run the football. I mean, and it doesn't make sense. I mean, it really doesn't make sense. How can you protect your quarterback this good, but yet, I mean, is it scheme? Is it technique? But then you watch, and it's not even scheme. The guys can't even get up and blow anybody off the fucking ball.
Yeah.
Like I said, Christian Lombard, I'm not trying to knock the kid down. If he's been hurt, same with Nick Martin. Dude, if you're hurt, then you're hurt. But somebody's got to come in. If there's nobody else behind him that can come in and play, then that's ridiculous.
Well,
But you have got to, I mean, as an offensive lineman, you got to go out there and want it.
Well, all right. So taking now taking sacks here, I think part of that is line. I think part of that is quarterback too. Reese threw a lot of balls out of bounds. I want to say I did the math on this earlier this year, and Golson was sacked more. God, it was something crazy. Like, Golson's been sacked more this year than Reese was in his entire career.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, and I don't think that's too uncommon.
No, all right.
Even with a mobile
with a mobile guy, I get that. But all right, so here's my next. Here's what I want to tie this into. What has Matt LaFleur done this year? Good or bad?
I don't know. I mean, I think when it comes down to like position coaches, I think it's hard to really. I'm talking about a quarterback's coach and a running back's coach. You know, it's really hard to pinpoint exactly how big of their impact has been. Good or bad, I think. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if any of it's been good. It doesn't seem like anything has worked.
I don't hear anybody.
George Whitfield doesn't seem like.
Yeah, I don't hear anybody talk about him. So I just don't know. Is he good or bad at what he does?
I don't know. If they bring up Golson's name in coaching, it's been a coin toss whether they're going to talk about Brian Kelly or George Whitfield.
Right.
So I mean LaFleur, I have no idea. So I just want to reiterate one thing real quick about the assistants and this whole Jeff Quinn thing. I don't care who is let go. Absolutely 100%. Anybody on the staff can go. And there needs to be a shakeup. And this includes Tony Alford, who is a hell of a recruiter. But I just don't care. I mean, if a shakeup needs to be made, it needs to be made. So do whatever has to be done to fix the situation. You know, it may seem like you're throwing, you know, too much into the fire to, you know, to get it going. But I mean, it is what it is.
I believe I think we're both in agreement that Quinn would help the offense. Now, that's not the only issue. The defense needs some work too, but getting the offense is one piece of the puzzle, and it's the one we're focusing on at the time, and that's Kelly's baby, right? I've heard a lot of people say playoff or bust next year. Like, you know, we're sick of 8 wins. The 12-win season was the exception, not the rule. You got an 8-win coach. They're looking at Nebraska, who just fired Paulini. The guys winning 9. You know, Nebraska fans probably suffer from what Notre Dame fans, which is the sense of entitlement and this belief that you can snap your fingers with one guy.
They're like 1996 of us right now.
Yeah, and make it the glory years again.
Nebraska is, you know what I mean? Right. So, I mean, they're...
Right,
I can relate.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of parallels just in the mentality. But how do you view Kelly? There, people are talking about. I wish he would leave. He needs to get fired. Northwestern's unacceptable. Next year's playoff or bust. How do you size up the whole thing? I mean, what's your feeling on Kelly as the coach for this team and this program moving forward?
Well, first, in a lot of ways, I would say next year's playoff or bust. And the only reason I say that is how much, and it depends. I mean, it really depends. It would be best case scenario of everyone coming back next year. And who's to say what transfers out, who goes to the draft, any of that noise. I mean, from what I have written down and pegged down for you know, one of the better cases, I wouldn't say best case, but better cases of personnel issues, they're going to be fucking loaded next year. And I was thinking from the jump, you know, when Kelly's name started getting brought up about Florida and all that, I'm like, there is no way in hell he's walking away from this 2015 team. I can't see it. It was so young this year. We had to go so deep down the roster just to man a football team. If they can get healthy, which by all accounts would suggest that they should be all healthy come August, this is going to be a hell of a roster out there, full of playmakers, athletes, speed, with experience, young guys with a lot of experience. I couldn't see him walking away from a roster like that. So, yes, playoffs or bust next year, I think, is it's a real thing. I mean, I don't see any way around it. The schedule will be the schedule. Who knows what it's going to be like? This year is supposed to be the toughest we've ever had, and yet it was about as mediocre as it gets. So But as far as Brian Kelly and the job he's doing, I think it's kind of funny. I had never heard of any issues between any real lingering issues between Brian Kelly and Jack Swarbrick until this last week and a half.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's kind of funny. Like yeah. I've never, and, you know, and I
people are like, oh, they don't even talk. They don't even talk.
I won't
talk
say I'm around the program as an insider. Blah blah blah. Yeah. But I've been around the program a little bit. Been around the university quite a lot, and every vibe I have ever gotten from the university, from the the employees there, and from just kind of being around that scene a little bit, is that there is a healthy working relationship between the two of them. And I could be absolutely mistaken, as I would have been for the last 4 years. Up until this last week and a half was the first time I had ever heard that there was serious, serious issues. I can see Jack being pissed that Brian Kelly talked to the Eagles after 2012. That's acceptable. That's an acceptable level of pissed offitude. But that was 2012. It's 2014. I cannot see it being like they – I mean, there's stories out there like they don't even talk. Like, where the fuck was this 3-4 weeks ago? I mean, I just – to me, it seems made up. And, I mean, so I just don't – I don't know how that relationship works. And that's what, you know, that's the cog, you know, that's going to tell you whether he's going to be here, you know, another year, 2 years or what, 3 years, whatnot. So I think next year, you know, it may be Kelly's last. You know, if we go to the playoffs, say we go to the playoffs, we win or lose a semifinal game, but still come up short on the title, you know, maybe he sticks around for another 3 years. Maybe he gets that NFL offer that he's looking for and bolts. I don't know. Nor do I care. I'm in no mood to be out searching for a coach.
Yeah.
And this year especially.
Yeah.
I mean, who the hell are you gonna hire?
Yeah. Hey, how about Notre Dame, Nebraska, Michigan, Florida? Let's all go look for a coach at the same time.
Exactly. and this is exactly what would happen. You know, even if there was some hotter names out there. What, you know, is exactly what Bob Davey told Urban Meyer. What school is going to allow you to win quicker? You know, obviously it's a school like Florida. I mean, it's a no-brainer, really, if you're an up-and-coming coach.
You know,
or a coach that wants to win a title, where is the easier place to win?
Maybe in the long run. I think if you were looking at, like, an Urban Meyer scenario where you just walked in and, like, year one or year two, you drop bombs with the other guy's players – I think Notre Dame is such a complete, like you're talking about the roster. Now, Kelly's not leaving. This is all hypothetical. But I think Notre Dame would be close to Florida in that regard if you're just looking at next year. Now, going down in your career, you're moving to this new school. Yeah, it's a hell of a lot easier to recruit to Florida. You don't have to deal with the academics and all that.
I think most coaches wouldn't just be looking at the next year.
No, I know. I agree.
They'd be looking at the next three to four, at least.
Crazy just to look at one. But, I mean, I don't think Michigan or Nebraska is anywhere near as complete as Notre Dame and Florida are in the near term.
No, but they
can
offer more money, first of all.
Potentially.
Yeah. I pretty much guarantee you they could offer more money. I think Michigan is such a clusterfuck of itself. I thought it was funny that the AD finally said something about the term Michigan man this week. Because that's really not working for it. Anyways, so
all right.
They might actually do something smart for the first time in forever.
And hire Willingham?
God, no. Isn't that like... That's like awesomely.
That's every.
I mean, I could see that happening, dying and going to heaven. And then there's like having this room you walk into.
All right.
And there's Ty Willingham coaching the Skunk Bears.
All right, listen, let's try to wrap this thing up. The final thing I want to ask you about, I do a radio show with my brother. It's called Indy Fan Radio. It's on TNNDN. Pretty sure you're aware. Anybody else out there that's
very aware, everybody should be listening to it.
Yeah, you've called in. So. But we had somebody call in, when I say somebody, my cousin is one of the most diehard bench and fire. Like he just, you know, he doesn't put up with anything, right? Golson's got like three turnovers and in two back-to-back games, he's like, bench him. Just bench him. You know, if and he is the...
Set his sack on fire.
He is one of the biggest Brian Kelly supporters ever. He wanted him to come into Notre Dame more than anybody else, and I guarantee it, if Notre Dame has 8 wins last year, despite the circuit, doesn't matter what happened. The team bus could go off into a ravine and half a team be missing. Notre Dame decides to continue. They only have 8 wins. He would say, fire Brian Kelly. That's just how he is. He says there is absolutely no way that Notre Dame should take a bowl. They would be nuts. It's championship or bust. They're crazy. Why do you want to get blown out by an SEC team? He is vehemently opposed to taking a bowl game, even though I asked him, because he thinks Golson should never play again either. I said, if you're that convinced you want Zaire, would you not at least want Zaire to play the bowl game? And the only point I can get him to say is, okay, fine. If I knew for a fact that Zaire was going to start and play the entire bowl game, maybe I'd say they should take one, but I don't think they should take one. What do you, there are a lot of people that are like that. What do you say? What do you say to those people?
Well, my thoughts, if I was a therapist, were that these people are running and afraid of being hurt. My thoughts as a blogger is, and I wrote this just the other day.
And I read it too.
You are either a coward ass bitch, or I mean, get the fuck out of here with this. Anytime someone brings up, well, I don't want to go to a bowl game, play a team and get beat. Are you fucking kidding me? And you might as well just not watch a football game the rest of your lives. I'm sorry, but this is 2014. This is not 1962. You go to your fucking bowl game. There is no you. If you had a shitty year, fuck you, buddy. Go play in your fucking bowl game. Yeah. It is your fucking duty to go play it. You fucking have to. Unless you have a coaching fire, which is the only acceptable reason, you go fucking play your game.
Yeah,
they did it in 2009 when they fired Weiss.
Yep.
And even then, I was like, man, I wanted them to go to a bowl game.
I think for him,
I didn't care who they play.
Yeah.
But I saw the reasoning behind it. Completely understood. I understand. You know, that's yeah. Fine.
I think for
this is not 1996.
Yeah, I will say this. I have heard people on Twitter say they think we're going to get blown out. My cousin, I will say this, does not believe that. His motive is it's beneath Notre Dame. They should be in a playoff or a major bowl. No, okay, would win, he's saying, I want you to approach the other side.
If Alabama only won 7 games this year, would it be beneath Alabama to go to their bowl game? Do you think Nick Saban would keep his fucking team home from a bowl game?
He's saying if they're going to the Pinstripe Bowl and playing Rutgers. That's
doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Nick Saban goes to fucking New York. And he finds a way to power fuck the shit out of Rutgers. You don't sit at home with your fucking dick in your hands acting like a little bitch. You go fucking play your fucking game. Quit acting like a little hoe. Quit thinking you're better than everyone else. You haven't been fucked in fucking 25 years. Go out there and do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't have any stronger feelings about this. When someone says, oh, they're too fucking good for this, are you fucking kidding me? The last national title was in 88.
Yeah.
You played for one in 2012. You got fucked out of one in 1993. Other than that, you have been a doormat for people's fucking headlines on newspapers.
Yeah. Well, again, I think just to tie that back into, I mean, that's, and I think Nebraska is kind of in the same scenario. People that say fire Brian Kelly, you know, I don't know, man. I like him. I think he can get it done. I look at a guy like Joe Pa or Bowden. It took those guys like 15 years before they won their first title. I'm not saying Kelly's
got today's. I mean,
I get that. I get that. And I'm not saying you need
like
to get.
It'd be nice if it was, and I think that's why I have a stronger affinity towards a guy like Brian Kelly, because we can latch on to
I mean, listen, turning over a coach every 3 to 5 years, going through all the change, it's a pain in the ass. It sucks.
Yeah.
That's why I wonder, like, you know, the people with the mentality of fire the coach, bench the quarterback indefinitely, don't take the bowl game. People like Nebraska that are like, hey, he's only winning 9 games a year. Get him the hell out of here. It's like, listen, man. You're Nebraska. You know, you used to be good. We're Notre Dame. We used to be good. We're not elite. It's not like that's the past. It's not like that anymore.
It's not even close. And there are so many factors involved. I mean, when you start talking about You talked about recruiting earlier. Try explaining it to some 17-year-old kid who's coming out of high school why you didn't go to a bowl game.
Well, all right.
Because that's beneath you.
This is,
yeah, in his 17 years, what has he witnessed?
This is something else I wanted to say. I'm glad you brought that up. All right. So if you believe it's playoff or bust next year, okay. If that's what you want to say, then that's what you say. Fine. You know, I'll reserve judgment to see how the whole season goes before I formulate an opinion or just make it binary. You're either in the playoff or Kelly needs to go. I don't want to say that because there's just too much can happen. Either way, however you fall on that. You have to recognize the defense this year. How many freshmen and sophomores were on the team? A, B, how much they're going to play a part next year based on their experience, based on depth. Some of them may start, some of them may get relegated. Who knows? But if you do think it's playoff or bust, and you forego,
I mean, I'm one of those people, but yeah, I am a preseason playoff or bust.
But if you also stand on the side of the fence that says we should not go to a bowl game this year, so you're telling me that you expect Notre Dame to be in the playoff next year, largely on the back of a lot of freshmen and sophomores this year, who their first bowl experience is going to be a national semifinal game. You don't want all the freshmen on the roster this year, even if it's the El Paso Sun Bowl Pinstripe.
Do you not even remember 2012 national title game, bro?
Would you not at least want the freshmen on this roster to have seen something resembling a bowl game before they go into your national semifinal playoff or bust scenario next year? I just think they need that. They have to.
Just listen. So many of these fans are just whiny bitches that just cannot take any fucking thing at all. Hell, you could be game one, third quarter, throw an interception. Fucking take a scholarship away.
I mean, come on.
I mean, it's just an overreactionary world that we're living in anyways. And then when you start looking I found it comical after we lost to Northwestern a little bit. I really wanted to be a fly on the wall in some of these Chicago offices.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, these guys that hang their hats on being Notre Dame alumni in the office, you know, and just the football program and Western Notre Dame mix.
Yeah, it was humbling. I mean, and that's a crummy loss, and they were not a good team. I mean, and they had a running back again that went for 160 yards on his own. So there's issues. Listen, man, we're getting close to 45 minutes, which is kind of what we had allotted here. There's a lot more to talk about, and anybody, if you want to call in tonight, we're going to do a show tonight, or anybody else that wants to talk about it, or I'm sure we'll do another Subway Domer here. Podcast special for y'all after the bowl, perhaps in the off season. We got recruiting coming up. With just a couple of minutes left, what I really want to do is just figure out, what are you bumping, man? What do we need to be listening to on the way out of this thing? Or do you have final thoughts you need to add?
I really don't have any final thoughts other than, look, it doesn't matter. We're going bowling. You know, they're not going to listen to your cries of ignorance. We're going to go to a bowl game. So it's time to either, you know, pack up and support it and get ready for it, or just stop fucking watching.
Yeah.
And that's really all I have to say. And I can't tell you what's going to happen. We could get our asses kicked. We could go out and hammer some piece of shit team.
Hey, we could go out and hammer a good team.
We could. Hey. I mean, and then there you go. And that little bit of optimism can really spark next year. And it helps in the perception area, which is huge when you start talking about a group of people deciding which four slots teams are playing.
Sure.
I can't explain that enough, that perception is king in college football. But yeah, then that's it.
Yeah, fuck it, dude. Let's go bowling.
I'm bumping Kid Cudi, Pursuit of Happiness, because fuck, man, that's what I'm looking for.
There you go. The Pursuit of Happiness. All right, folks, this is the Subway Domer podcast, your gracious, I don't want to say gracious, it's your emperor.
Your fucking warlord.
Your warlord, at the Subway Domer on Twitter, www.subwaydomer.com. I am at Irish Tightness on Twitter. You can find us on TNNDN Radio. Appreciate everybody's time. Let's get a bowl game. Let's go beat somebody. Let's go beat somebody down. That's what
Team Belk Bowl, buddy.
Team Belk Bowl. Let's get it done. All right, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, man.
Yep.
How
it go? Yep. If I fall, if I die, no, I lived it to the fullest.
if I fall. If I die, know I lived and missed some bullets. I'm on the pursuit of happiness, and I know everything will shine. Ain't always gonna be gold. I'll be fine once I get it. I'll be good.